Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
We're so glad that you decided to tune in today. We know that you have things on your heart and your mind, and we want to help you with them. And today we're going to take calls 1-800-229-3000, but we are so enamored with the wisdom of our co-hosts, aren't you? I know you are. Today we have Dr. Alice Benton and Chris Williams. And Chris, we want to hear from you today. What is on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind today is in working with so much trauma and helping people recover from trauma and getting my own journey. One of the things that has become so obvious to me is that fear and pain are powerfully transformative and formative, meaning that they fear and pain form us into themselves. And to respect how powerful that is, Jesus had in this unbelievable wisdom, just doesn't get the credit for how insightful, how intelligent Jesus actually is. To which he says, "Do not, you've heard it was said, eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do," and I'm going to do a little bit of translation work here, okay? "But I tell you, please do not become the evil that has been done to you." Mm. Please do not become the evil that has been done unto you. So much of what happens in why we as therapists are oftentimes digging into the childhood, going back into those closets and those old bones, is because we become the thing that formed us. How many abused kids become abusers? You know, how many sexualized trauma children become adults who sexually traumatize others? And so this speaks to the incredible work and responsibility that we have to engage in a healing and growth process. Healing and growth process is not merely, for many of us, just one more self-help thing to optimize our life in one more area. It's essential, as we say, to break generational curses. And what that is just patterns that have been passed down that we don't know how to do any differently. Mm-hmm. We take the pain and the anger produced from it, and we offload it onto others, you know? And I say, you know, in my own life, I swore that I would never become an alcoholic, and I was wildly successful, and I failed miserably because I became an addict of a different kind. And that is really not until getting into the root and getting into the pain, getting into the fear, and working it out, finding the healing, finding the growth, continuing the work, that we can live in hope, that we can live in freedom, that we can live in clarity to then live out things where we do not have to repay evil for evil because we live in a different way. We have a different hope and we have a different experience that is much better than cycles of violence, cycles of vengeance, cycles of fear, cycles of pain. And so it's just what I'm wrestling with today, what I'm encouraging today, and I want to encourage everyone else. Let us
help you. Well, I was thinking even about the passage that says, get rid of all bitterness and resentment.
Yes.
And so maybe if you were abused, you don't abuse, but you become bitter and resentful.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that root of bitterness stays and grows, and it impacts your life so that you're not living free. And, you know, it's what Steve says all the time. It's justifiable resentment. You can make a story about what happened to you was so terrible that you deserve to be doing whatever in reaction to that. But that is not how God wants us to live. He wants us to be free and to be able to extend that love. Because isn't that a better story, Chris?
Much better story.
When you have overcome whatever the wrong was done to you, and you live in freedom and you offer grace and mercy to other people. Wow, that is a story to tell. Thank you, Chris. We'll be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, if you're getting stuck somewhere, an intensive may be your next right step. You know, we've got a couple of them. Every Man's Battle, we talk about on a regular basis because we offer that more often, but it's for men who need to deal with their sexual integrity. And that is everything from sexual addiction to not living the life that God has provided for you to live, you know, that you would be a man of integrity. And we have those throughout the year. We also have our emotional freedom, which is online. Chris is one of our speakers there. And that is literally to address those places that you are stuck, whether it's depression, grief, trauma, or even resentment, similar to what, you know, Chris was just talking about. If you're stuck in a place because of a past wound, that is a great way to get started on your journey. Restore is for women who have been betrayed, and it is a great way for you to begin that healing. If you've experienced sexual betrayal from your partner, your husband, your, you know, or even if you've had a family member, a father who you witnessed, you know, sexual integrity impacted you. We have an incredible weekend where you can begin that healing journey. And last but certainly not least is intimacy and marriage. It's for couples who really want to have not only a better relationship, but a way to connect meaningfully and have an incredible connection with each other, and you're not miserably married. I mean, wouldn't that be great? You can have all the information. You can go to newlife.com and look them up. And, you know, Dr. Dave Stoop, who we miss dearly, but we quote regularly, Dave Stoop said that these intensives are like months of therapy. Mm-hmm. And we've said that before here, that it's a deep dive, but we also combined the groups, which may make you feel a little bit nervous, but boy, I tell you, there is nothing like those group experiences. We have great facilitators, great speakers, and we want to have you there. We want to see you there. So give us a call about that. We are going to go to the calls, and we are going to talk with Rhonda, who has called us from Boston and listens on WEZE. Hello, Rhonda. How can we help you?
Thanks for taking my call. I love your show, and it seems today is about some trauma, and that's what I'm calling with. My daughter, who has had probably four miscarriages and one stillbirth at 7 months, and that was 2 years ago, and she's still, I guess we're all still grieving from that. Mm. But she gets so sad and depressed and can, you know, take to the bed and want to stay there for a little bit, only a couple of days, but still she does that. She has a four-year-old son who is probably her miracle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to find some phrases or words not to agitate her, because I don't really know how, you know, I can only imagine her heart, but just trying to help her with that a little bit better, I guess, is what I'm saying or asking about. She does talk to a therapist once a week, but it's probably not enough for her if she's still feeling so sad. Recently had a miscarriage a few months ago, so, and friends are having babies, and so all of that is just stinging, you know. It's hard.
It is hard, Rhonda. We're so sorry for this continual losses. Alice, let's start with you.
I want to put it, Rhonda, in those terms that she has lost four or five children, that four or five of her children have passed away. Oh, so to hear that she's going through these cycles of depression and can't get out of bed for a couple of days at a time, you see that individual therapy is good and necessary, but insufficient. And it must be very hard to point that out to her. You're worried about agitating her, and so I think she doesn't receive a whole lot of feedback from you. Is that right?
No, she would. We have a very close relationship. I just don't always know the words, or I don't want to stir the pot or whatever. You know, if she's having good days, I want to just kind of stay away from it a little bit. We go up and pick up her son from preschool once a week on Fridays, and we stay at their home probably one night, maybe two. So we're there. We have a lot of support for her, and, well, I think that feels like a lot. I don't know if it is, but, you know, I just think she probably needs more intensive
think
a little bit of, you know, that's trauma, and I feel the trauma as well as,
yeah,
you know, not, I can't imagine as her, but as her mom, I see that, and I just want to take it.
And Rhonda, if you've ever tried to gently point out that you want to help her get more help in addition to the therapy, how has she responded to that?
A little bit, but she'll, you know, she's dismissive of it, and I'm sure they want her on a little bit of medication, but she, and she did that once for a little bit, but blames that on a couple of her miscarriages, so she stays away from that at all costs.
Yeah.
I have a question, Rhonda. Is she working with someone for her physical care?
Yes.
Like a lot of times
yes.
when people are struggling with fertility issues or multiple miscarriages, they have a specialized doctor who understands the hormones, the internal challenges that she may be having. Is anybody working with her on that level?
She has seen, or they have seen, some fertility people. So the answer to that is yes.
Okay.
I don't know how deeply they've gone. I know she... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say, Alice talked about miscarriage a couple of weeks ago on the show, and we, you know, one of the things that a lot of women overlook is the hormonal fluctuations. You may not have a baby,
right.
but you are still experiencing postpartum depression.
Yes.
And then if you have multiple losses on top of that, it starts... I mean, that affects your brain. It affects your body. And just like you said,
yeah.
Alice, the severe losses is just, it's a lot for anybody.
Yeah.
So it will need some specialized care. And I won't say anymore, Chris or Alice, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, Rhonda, as we're hearing what is horrifically tragic, horrifically heartbreaking, I'm also hearing what's right.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what's right is she's seeing a therapist. Part of what's
yeah.
right is she's actually getting out of bed. 2 years in is still early.
Mm-hmm.
It's still really early in the process. And I know you've got to be terrified. But she also has, and when you say we, do you mean you and your husband, her dad?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
She has a mom and a dad who are there with her and for her and supporting her and supporting their grandchild. There is so much good here in the midst of what is horrifically tragic. And so I point that out because what I'm hearing underneath all of this, Rhonda, is a lot of fear and anxiety, reasonably so, inside of you. Of like, I just want my daughter to get better, and I hate that she's suffering, and I don't want it to get any worse. And that all makes makes a lot of sense, but I don't want that to be the entire story. There's a bigger story going on here, a bigger reality, and that is that your daughter is in horrific emotional, and to Becky's point, physical, spiritual. She's just in pain, and it's got to be incredibly difficult as a parent to experience that pain for yourself as well in a different way, but also to see her in it. And so I want you to see that there's a lot going on here that is really good. I also think that, hey, she might need more care for sure, but I think it sounds to me like there is some progression going on in her recovery. But the other thing...
Yes, I've seen that.
Okay, perfect. Stay with that. Stay on the hope side without neglecting the things that you're concerned of. But the other thing that we have this pressure, I think we all carry this pressure, is there something I can say to help? Or is there something I'm going to say to hurt in these really, really fragile situations? The truth of the matter is that we overestimate our words in these situations, and we underestimate our presence. We see this with Job.
Sure.
Job had his friends for the first 7 days do something brilliant, and this is kind of a pejorative way for me to put it, but they just shut up. They were just let the love of their presence be there, and then kind of when they got into trouble and they were unhelpful, even hurtful, is when they tried to give explanation to something that was deeply mysterious that only God could give explanation to.
Right, because we can't.
Yeah, you know.
I know.
And we could be helpful.
I often say I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's it. And so
I know.
And I would encourage you and your husband to get into some therapy so you guys can process what's happening inside of you. It's different than your daughter, but you've lost.
Yeah.
You've now lost grandchildren, and you feel like you've lost your daughter as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like the scripture that says, "Hope deferred makes the heart
sick."
And that's what you're all experiencing.
Absolutely.
Alice?
Rhonda, as you said, on her good days, I don't want to talk about the difficulty and the loss and the struggle. And it will be good to ask your daughter, am I listening enough? How do you want me to talk about the loss of the babies? Or do you not want me to talk about it? Rhonda, with my own miscarriage, I want people to talk about my son who is in heaven. We named him. His name is Vincent.
Yeah.
We have a cake for him on the anniversary of his passing to just celebrate that he's a part of our family. And we want to talk about this son, this brother that my siblings are missing. But that's just the way that I'm healing from it. I want him to be talked about and be present. Your daughter may not want that. And so finding out from her, how do you want me to talk about this? Is it okay if I ask about how your therapy is going? And if I have ideas that I think might be helpful to your therapeutic process, can I bring them up, or would you prefer me not to? And two of those ideas might be a grief group in addition to her therapy, if she's not in a grief group. And then I've worked with many women who, because they also want to get pregnant again, potentially, or they're nursing, they don't want to be on an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication. And Dr. Amen takes a homeopathic route first and foremost. And he's got clinics all over the United States. And so looking into his manner of treating depression and anxiety through natural supplements might feel safe enough for her to consider.
That's a good idea. I have seen him talk and listened on your show of him. I think I have a book of his. We named her. She was Rose, or she is Rose. So sweet, right?
Yeah.
It's good to hear Rose's name.
I know. And Kristen was very strong through all of that and took care of it all in the right way. Can't get into all of that with you now, but she has often said, I don't really want to live, and that's the hottest thing.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And to that point, Rhonda, when it reaches that level, you do want to step in and make sure that she remains safe and everyone around her remains safe.
So you ask for permission to talk with her clinician and maybe even have a therapy session with her clinician to say, let's safety plan.
Oh.
When my daughter's feeling suicidal, what should I do?
Yeah.
And hear from the therapist and your daughter about that.
One other aspect of this, Rhonda, is your daughter's husband supportive? And what is their process? Because this is something they're both experiencing, but is that part of their healing?
Exactly. He is supportive, and he has gone through it with her for sure. And you know, patient. I'm sure there's been times he's not, but patient, and his parents pray for them always, and they're in a different state, but they're not, you know, local.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. It's really impactful to both the husband and the wife. And, you know, there is healing that's available. I'm going to send you a copy of Laura Manja McDonald's Heart Handbook for your daughter. It's not specific to miscarriage, but it's really about that care that we can offer in those times of trouble. And we'll be praying for your daughter. We'll be praying for you too, Rhonda, as you support them. And I love what Alice and Chris have offered today. You know, we never know where people are hurting. You know, something like this, you're not seeing that, right? It's, you know, you may be working with somebody who's dealing with this. You may be a neighbor to someone who's dealing with a loss of some kind that you just can't see. We don't always wear our troubles out on our sleeve, but boy, it makes a difference, especially if you're a believer. Extend the love of Christ. Be the body of Christ, like you said, Chris. We'll be right back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, if you do have a question and you're not listening Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 1 to 3 is when we record, you can call or you can go to newlife.com/radio, and we've got instructions there for you to offer your question that we can answer at on airtime, and then we'll let you know when we play that. We want to be there for you and know that it might not be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday when you're available to call. So we wanted to give you an opportunity to connect with us in other ways. Right now, we're going to connect with Cynthia, who's calling us from Washington, D.C., and listens on WAVA. Hello, Cynthia. Thanks for waiting. How can we help you today?
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, I have a daughter who is going to college soon. She's 17, and she says she has social anxiety. So my question here is, how do I support her? We've tried to get some counseling previously, but she said it didn't work. She was telling me she needs somebody who has the EBT component, but the ones we have gotten for her, none of them have that. So she told me it was not productive.
Cynthia, did you say CBT or CBD?
Yes.
Or DBT.
Therapy. I think he's a cognitive behavioral therapy, something like that.
Oh, cognitive behavioral therapy.
CBT,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And Chris, might you go ahead and start?
Well, let me just say this. There are many, many different types of therapy out there, and social anxiety definitely doesn't fit into one size fits all. And so here's what I'll say about finding a good therapeutic fit. There's two things. Primary things. There's more than this, but two primary things. We want to look for the level of comfort, connection, and chemistry. And I'll put those in one category. And that's what we call a therapeutic relationship. Is the person I'm sitting in front of, do I feel comfortable with them? Do I have rapport with them? And then the other one is simply this, competence. Is this person able to help me with what I'm working, you know, struggling with, and help me get to the goals that I want to get to? And so when we see that there's these titles, and they're meaningful, you know, a CBT, a DBT, an EMDR, and, you know, I can go on and on and on and on. Those do speak to a level of competency, but those don't speak to the entire picture. Because I do believe it's really important for your 17-year-old daughter to get some help, especially as she's going into college. And I'm going to put something out there that I just have to say. I haven't treated a person struggling with alcohol dependency who hasn't had social anxiety. And so, because it's really simple. If you have social anxiety and you have a couple drinks in you, you no longer have social anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's really that simple. And so we have to understand and respect the power that these substances have and the solution that they offer, as well as the trap that they can become. And so smart, good, competent people finding, you know, those things do, even highly spiritual people, do not keep you anesthetized from the power of substances to solve a problem that is otherwise unsolvable. And that's why it's important to get into that deeper work. The other thing is, I've never worked with a person with social anxiety who didn't have a primary negative belief about themselves. And that's the one thing that you want to get to in the therapeutic process. For instance, like if I'm that person with social anxiety, and I believe that underneath all of it, that I'm fearful that I'm just not good enough. I'm not good enough for a relationship, or I have some sort of primary deficiency in my life, then the more people, the more eyes that are around me, the more opportunity it is there is for me to experience this painful deficiency inside of me. That's oftentimes the heartbeat of social anxiety. And so it's not merely about coping mechanisms, but it's really about reorganizing myself and how I experience the world. And this is one other quick piece. And some people are just more introverted than others. And that's okay. And so it's learning yourself and how you do social situations, and also how you not do social situations.
Right. And that's so powerful.
Cynthia, you've been doing the right thing trying to get her into therapy and that you haven't given up. She's attempted with at least a couple therapists. Is she now refusing to do any more therapeutic work?
No, she's actually begging for it. And she's like, I have to get this if I go to college. She's actually every day, she's like, so are you not going to get me this? I think I need this. I don't want to get worse. So, but I had to go to a psychiatrist who recommended the couple that we see. But she's like, when I get there, they just ask me to talk about myself. And they don't give me anything to work with. So
after that,
she's like, this is not working. So it's hard for us to get somebody who could really help her.
We have great people in that area. But Cynthia, what you're talking about is strategy. It's, okay, I recognize what I have. And similar to what you were just talking about, Chris. Alice, any other thoughts that you have for Cynthia?
Well, Cynthia, that your daughter is willing and recognizes one form of therapy is not working, so I need somebody who's more directive. That's easy to find if you just ask the right questions, and we can do that for you and with you with our network of counselors. But I also want you to think about something over the break. Do you know what she went through previously in her life? Maybe she was injured in relationship, emotionally injured, that might be feeding her ongoing anxiety. But we'll come back to ask you about that after the break.
If it's not one thing, it's 10 others. But to your point, to understand what was the starting point and did it just grow over time? And what attempts have we made to do something different? That applies to everything, whether it's anxiety, depression. We got to figure things out. We'll be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We were in the middle of a conversation with Cynthia, whose 17-year-old daughter is dealing with social anxiety, wants help, and is heading to college in the fall and wants to be prepared. Alice, you had another thought for Cynthia?
Do you know what the root is of her anxiety, Cynthia?
No, not exactly. I noticed that when she was in third grade, she moved from one school to a different school. She was perfectly okay. But I noticed over the fourth, fifth grade, she wasn't having friends a lot. She was becoming too... Actually, she's an introvert, but she was becoming kind of going into herself and not having a friends, but she kept saying, okay, I'm like, why don't you have some friends? Okay, next time, because she'll become friends with this one because she was new. Next year, the person will go to a different class, so it's like starting again. I never noticed until we were talking about something a couple of years ago, and she said... she has social anxiety. I don't even know what social anxiety is. I'm like, what is that? So she told me, and then during this therapy session, that's when she now say related it to when she was in middle school. But I can't really place, I don't know exactly what it is, but I know it's from school, yeah.
So it may not be a specific injuring event, but rather that for a period of time and with these switches in schools, it's been difficult for her to establish friendship, and she might be shy, and yet she knows she has this issue. She's surprisingly willing and desiring to overcome it. Colleges, if she's going off to college and will be living on campus, you may know this, but they tend to have pretty good counseling centers, often staffed by peer students who are advanced in their studies. And so even if we'll help connect you with a clinician, but colleges have great peer groups to support each other as new freshmen transition into living on campus and engaging in college life. So many resources that will be able to help your daughter with that level of willingness she has.
Yes. And Cynthia, we're going to send you a copy of Conquer Worry and Anxiety by Dr. Daniel Amen. I think that'll help both of you, help you understand, but help her understand as well. and we'll connect you with a therapist in your area, and we'll pray for your daughter. This mm-hmm. is a new chapter in her life, and we can't wait to hear the other side of that story. We're going to continue on with the calls. We're talking with Mike, who is calling us from L.A. and listens on KKLA. Hello, Mike. How can we help you today?
Oh, yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just am calling. I lost my wife on Thanksgiving Day, advanced Alzheimer's. With her, she was in abortion care for about 4 years, and we would have been married 20 years this past Valentine's Day. I met her on eHarmony.com, I'm in the process, the unbelievable process of grieving. You know, I don't think you move on from it. I think that the grief will always probably be there, and you know, certainly I love her and always will. And I just want to just check with you. Even though she's passed away, you know, I wasn't able to be with her intimately for the 4 years that she was in the board and care. And now that she's gone, I just wanted to ask about how a guy in my situation might move on in terms of sexuality. I know it's kind of a left field question, but anyway, I just you know, my goal is to honor God and enjoy His presence forever, and I just want to see what your thoughts might be about expressing sexuality as a widower. Just that's the reason for the call.
That's a great question, that Mike. Is. It's a very confusing time, and it's, you know, and also we get that question from single people mm-hmm. as well. It's if I'm going to live a life for God. Chris, let's start with you.
Well, I always start with intimacy, closeness, relational closeness. And, you know, I oftentimes, obviously, with my background, both personally and professionally, come at this, you know, from an addictive perspective. And not everyone has sexual addiction. So I just want to, you know, disclaim that right from the get-go. But oftentimes what happens, and I think this happens a little bit more readily in males than females, to be honest, is that we, for lack of a better term, sexualize our emotional experiences. And so if I'm sad, that closeness that that we can feel in a sexual experience soothes, comforts the sadness. Anxiety, all kinds of different ways in which that can happen. And so one of the things that we need to learn, people like myself, is that sadness needs comfort. It doesn't necessarily need sex. And how do I get that with close relationship and non-sexual intimacy? And that's where I would always start here is how do I increase the non-sexual closeness and intimacy in the relationships in my life and the quality of relationships in my life?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so.
Well, I was going to say, Mike, does that make sense or do you have questions about that particular approach?
Well, you know what? I had a previous marriage. It didn't last very long. She just didn't want to stay married. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my wife of almost 20 years passed away on Thanksgiving Day. I'm kind of inclined not to get married again.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And so that's where the question—that's where the question's coming from.
Yeah, I'd have to say so. You know, I told my wife on her deathbed. I told her, "I love you so much, and just wait for me." You know, I was when just before she passed, a few minutes before, I was just holding her hand and telling her I loved her and asking her to wait for me. And kissing her on the forehead. They didn't think it was a good idea for me to kiss her on the mouth because of the morphine that she had. You know, I'm just, as I was saying earlier, I want to honor God and be faithful to Him and glorify Him in all the relationships that I have. And, you know, I believe that sex is only appropriate in marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm just looking how to express my sexuality in light of that.
And are you wondering if another form of you practicing sexuality, like self-pleasure, if that's allowable for you biblically?
We can discuss that if you wish.
Because if you don't plan on dating again, you don't plan on getting married, and you think sex only belongs to marriage, mm-hmm. and I agree that that's God's design for us, I think that self-pleasure, although the Bible speaks to it only in one format, but not clearly taking a stand against it, but it is something that can be a spiral if it's what you turn to on a frequent or chronic mm-hmm. basis mm-hmm. and have no intention of being in romantic relationship again. So it can be something that becomes a crutch that people turn to that then takes that comfort that you really need from another human being and makes it an isolated event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah. And Mike, I I think that this, to your point, to Becky's point, Alice's point, this is a really important question. You do want to honor God and honor God with your sexuality and remain in alignment with your values. That is the will of God. In that, I'm still hearing in the subtext of all of this, underneath the surface of all of this, that your life with your wife was a big life with your wife. And there is still a lot of grief underneath that. And what I would want to encourage you is to get into a grief share group. And
I'm already there.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Are you connected? Is there other men in that group?
There are.
Awesome. I would continue connecting with them. Are you getting coffee with them? Are you kind of like, hey, I love what you shared the other night, and I'd, you know, love to get coffee.
You know, I'm not doing that now. That's a great thought. It's just usually I see him an hour and a half a week on Monday nights starting at 7 until
uh-huh.
about 8:30.
Yeah.
And that's basically the extent of it right now.
Oh, I want you to increase that because what the other thing is, you know, in recovery we have a sponsor. And a sponsor will really, a person wiser that's a little bit further down the road, or it doesn't have to be older, but a person that can help us walk through this. And walk out what it means to be a sexual being in a single and grieving period of life. Because I right now, when you say, I don't want to get married again, I don't hear I just don't hear God's will. What I hear is fear. And that's what I mean. It's like, if you can work through the fear, if you can work through this, if the grief becomes something that is, like you said, you live with, well with, not necessarily apart from it, but that relationship no longer becomes associated with painful loss.
Let me ask you a quick question. It sounds like you're getting ready to close, but anyway, if I were to remarry, and what would my wife think when we get to heaven?
Oh, great.
Great question.
Great question. Great question.
Mike, yeah. Hold on. We will enter into that conversation after this break. We're glad you called. Hold on.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I just want to remind you we have a matching gift campaign going on right now. And I'm sorry, I'm coughing. Chris, take it from there.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Maggie. We do have a matching campaign. And the impact that this makes, obviously, it's 2x. But two times what you financially give. Our prayer, our heart, our passion, our mission, what we invest in here at New Life is to take whatever you give and 10x it in the help that we provide. And so, if I can just say this, I know I'm making these numbers up, you know, but you give today and you're 20xing it because it's going to get doubled in the financial gift and it's going to get then 10xed in the impact it makes in somebody's life. And to not make this up, to bring this in real time, you know, I remember I was working with a guy and he was really, really struggling in his sexual addiction and couldn't get traction. Went to Every Man's Battle, had to go on a scholarship, didn't have the financial means. And as a result, you know, of going through that, he re-engaged. There were some things that were he was carrying inside that loosened up, that allowed him to get into his ongoing sustained victory and work and find the freedom. And it saved a marriage. It saved a family. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, it saved his job. Hmm. And then now he's a person who is helping others find that freedom. And yeah. This is not a one-off. This is what happens when people engage in a healing and growth process infused through Christ and his Spirit. And that's what we're here to do. To invest in that is to store up treasures in heaven. And right now, it's going to be matched. So this is the time to do it.
I love it. If you want to give, I know that you do want to give. Go to newlife.com/donate. Or you can text the word match to 28950. You can always call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. And we are so grateful for every gift that is given. It will make a difference, like Chris is saying. Now, we're going to continue back with Mike. And Mike, you dropped a great question right before the break. What will you tell your wife in heaven? But we had a little discussion in the break. Chris, why don't you start, and then we'll hear from Alice as well.
Yes, I mean, that's a great question of like what my wife will think in heaven. But I'm thinking, wait a second, Mike, you've had 4 years of celibacy, muscle memory. And my thought was, well, just keep doing what you've been doing for the last 4 years with your sexuality. Because what comes up for me again over and over again is that the loss is the loss of relationship. And so now the solution isn't sex, the solution is relationship. With the possibility of maybe there's a marriage out there, because then get to the secondary question of, you know, what will my wife think? I don't know, because there's a lot of different things that is referenced in the Bible about the afterlife, but one of them that Jesus tells us, there's not marriage there. So I don't know what that means again, and I don't know.
And I don't like that statement, by the way.
I don't like it either. I don't know. Again, the question, what will my wife think? I don't know. I have no idea. But I do know that you're carrying some hurt and loneliness right now that needs cared for.
Alice?
Well, to go back to that question of self-pleasure, Mike, I grew up in a Catholic church, Catholic community, and our view of it as Catholics was it is never acceptable. Self-pleasure is never acceptable. And as I've studied the Bible more, I don't think God clearly defines whether or not it is, but he certainly warns us over mm-hmm. and over where sexuality belongs. And so turning to any form of sex outside of it being with your spouse tends to lead to problems in the long run. So I would say not to look for that as the solution to feeling lonely and wanting sexuality in your life again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's the best way to go. You know, Mike, we're going to send you a copy of, I'm thinking, How You Think Determines the Course of Your Life by Laura Manja McDonald. Mm-hmm. I think that'll help you in that process. You're doing a lot of good work. You know, but there's more work to do, more healing to do. You know, I told you before about having the ability to ask questions when we are not live. And I think we have a queued up call that we are going to answer right now.
My name is Jan, and I'm calling from Mobile, Alabama. My question is, when I'm faced with a decision, maybe it can be financial, maybe it can be as far as a vacation, plans for a vacation, and I make a decision, I'm plagued by the afterthoughts, did I make the right decision? This follows me to bed that night and part of the day the next day, and I finally am forced to release it when another question comes along and I'm struggling with that question. So how can I find peace in the decision that I make, knowing that I made the best decision that I could with the information that I had? Thank you.
Well, that's a great question, Jan. Alice, what would you say to Jan?
Well, I think, Jen, that it's broader than just decision making, but rather there's probably an anxiety disorder that you may be experiencing. And perhaps there was a decision you made previously that went very poorly, and maybe you were traumatized by that event. And so you no longer trust your own judgment, and it's hard to rein in all the what-if thinkings, what-if thoughts that come up after you've made a decision. So I'd have you look into getting counseling for an anxiety disorder, considering a medical evaluation too, to check how well is your brain working with this, and are there some neurotransmitters that aren't functioning quite as they should be that then makes it difficult to redirect your thoughts.
Yeah,
I love that. Chris?
Yeah, because it reminds me of one of my favorite things to say about anxiety is it's worry looking for an excuse. but one of the aspects that Jan is facing that I oftentimes see is that we're looking for a sense of safety and security in the world. And if we grow up in environments where if you make the right decision, you're okay. If you make the wrong decision, you're not okay. It's called a good-bad split. If I'm good, I'm okay. If I'm bad, I'm not okay. And so the solution that the brain then locks on to is, what is the right decision so I can be okay? And that is the wrong process. Because we will make decisions that will not work out. We also make decisions that are poor ones. We make a lot of decisions, and we're not in charge of the outcome of many of the decisions that we make. That cannot be our ultimate sense of safety and security in the world. What then the direction that needs to take is, who am I in relationship with? Mm-hmm. How am I in relationship with? Because the safety and security I'm ultimately going to experience in this anxiety is through safe connection, what we talk about with attachment all the time. And so this is a person with probably a vacillating, or another term would be an anxious attachment. And so the fear behind this, if you struggle with this like Jan does, is that making the right decision is not going to help you. Getting in secure relationship with people is going to be your ultimate solution.
I also, in addition to that, Jan, I needed to replace my anxious thinking with God's truth. And I had not yet gotten in the practice of memorizing scripture, but I found it to be a solution to my anxiety. So whether it's do not be anxious about anything, or understanding that even the mistakes I make, God will work all things for the good, I have to counter my process of obsessive thinking with God's truth to interrupt it.
That's good.
Yes, I love that. I'm going to send her a copy of 100 Days of Freedom from Fear and Anxiety, and we're also going to suggest a couple of counselors in her area. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Alice. And you know, if you can't catch us on live radio, you can listen to us on the podcast, download the app, go to YouTube. We are here for you. If you need anything, call us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.